Josh Haston here, Israel Uncensored, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is Monday, September 14th, 2020, the 25th of Elul 5780, coming to you from Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the State of Israel and the Jewish people. We are gearing up for Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, which starts this Friday night, two-day holiday, Saturday and Sunday, perhaps a Rosh Hashanah like no other, as Israel is headed towards another lockdown, this time a three-week holiday lockdown where schools will be closed, many businesses closed, gatherings limited, and non-essential travel beyond 500 meters from home will be forbidden. Oh man, folks, this is where we are. During the first wave, Israel was an example of how to operate under Corona, the coronavirus, COVID-19. We were doing real well, and then we opened up in May, and this is where we are now with 1,119 Israelis who have succumbed to the virus. 40,347 active cases. These are the numbers from this morning here, Monday morning, September 14th. Those are the numbers. And starting Friday afternoon, we go into a three-week shutdown of many sectors of the country. A lot of finger-pointing going on here. A lot of finger-pointing at our government for the way they handled the situation, they handled the crisis, the indecisiveness, changing of regulations and restrictions from day to day. And there is a justification in blaming our leadership for the way this was handled. I said on the show before that we should have gone with Naftali Bennett's plan months ago, his extensive 15-point plan. I don't have the article in front of me, but you can go to the Jerusalem Post. He had a proposal, a concrete plan on how to deal with the coronavirus. Then we moved into this traffic light plan, and now basically, essentially all that's scrapped since the entire country, not just the red zones, the entire country is headed for a lockdown. And yeah, the government and our leadership is to blame. But I want to read a quote here in today's Jerusalem Post from the tourism minister, Asaf Zamir from the Blue and White Party. This is what he said. First of all, he argued late Saturday night that a full closure of the entire country during the holidays is too extreme a step and has economic implications that entire industries will not recover from. I hear what he's saying. I hear what that argument is. The economics don't make sense, and it'll be a severe blow to the economy. It'll crush businesses. I hear that argument as to why we should not implement a full lockdown. Okay, I was talking about this a lot on my show last week, that I think we've gotten to a point where there's no other choice. That being said, I do hear this side of the coin, this side of the story. I hear his opinion here. Zamir, I'll continue, Zamir also lashed out against, quote, outrageous violations of health ministry directives, from nightclub parties to weddings, and against the ministers who have failed to be role models, drawing his attention, putting the onus on those actual ministers who still go to weddings, who don't follow the rules, leaders who don't follow the rules. That's been a huge problem throughout. I think there was a deputy minister just last week who attended a so-called illegal wedding in an indoor facility over with 1,000 people. So the minister is not showing us, not leading by example. So I subscribe to that as well, what Zamir says. But here, I think this is the bottom line. He went on to say the following, quote, no one is a role model here, including some of my colleagues in the Knesset and government, and this is the result, he said. But he said that he will vote against the decision to impose a closure nevertheless. No one is a role model here. whether it is government officials or the Knesset, they are not the only ones who we should be blaming. No one is a role model, and I'm talking about ourselves. We need to look in the mirror, myself included. How did we all act over the last couple of months? Did we uphold all of the regulations? Did we do the basics? Did we wear masks outside? Did we keep social distancing? Did we keep hygiene? Did we wash our hands? Did we avoid going to illegal weddings, if you want to call them that, or weddings where there was dancing, weddings where people were not sitting 2 meters apart? And I need to look in the mirror too. I definitely did the best that I could, but I certainly wasn't perfect in keeping the regulations. And many other people were not perfect in keeping the regulations. And many other people deliberately broke the regulations or said they didn't care and didn't wear a mask, didn't keep social distancing, or they went to demonstrations, or they held illegal prayer services, not keeping the guidelines. So yeah, on one hand, I want to blame the government, and I want to say we opened too fast. I want to say the rules weren't clear. I want to say the government did not lead by example by breaking the rules themselves. But I also think we all need to look in the mirror as we head for another 3-week lockdown and think how unhealthy it is to be stuck at home for 3 weeks. Mentally, it's a challenge. Physically, apparently you can do sports on your own up to 500 meters from your house. It is going to be a challenge. And it is up to us. It is up to every single one of us here. And I'm talking about Israel specifically now. And I honestly, I've been trying to avoid listening to the news about Corona, not because I don't care about the world community, but it's just too much to listen to day in and day out. But as we head to this new year, 5781, and we head into a 3-week lockdown, the question we all need to ask ourselves is, have or will we be doing enough in order to adhere to the rules so that we don't have to go to another lockdown? And I just ask that everybody do the best that they can. Keep the rules, keep to the rules, as hard as it is, especially when you're stuck at home, especially under a 3-week lockdown. We all have to do our part. And I think that as a society, I think unfortunately we failed this time around. We did not do our part, regardless of if the government is ultimately responsible. We did not do our part, and that has to change. Or this coronavirus cycle of lockdowns and closures and then opening up for a few months and more people getting sick. And we have a record number. We had a record number the other day in terms of how many, I don't remember what the exact number is, thousands of people a day are testing positive. But we cannot continue down this path. And it starts with you. It starts with me. And that's the way we have to move forward as we head into a new year. And while this is the start of the show, I'm just praying for a healthy new year for all of us. We should all be well and feel good and come out of this, please God, very, very soon. And that is my Rosh Hashanah wish, and I'll probably repeat it again at the end of the show. But that is where I'm holding right now, Monday, just several days before Rosh Hashanah. I was going to talk about Minister Litzman, Construction Minister Litzman resigning, but I don't want to get into too many details. He quit his post in protest over the lockdowns over Rosh Hashanah. I was going to get more into details about he said, she said, people pointing at Litzman for not adhering to the rules and some of the other policies and positions he's taken on other issues, but I'm just not going to get into that. Other people agree that Litzman should have resigned now because of the point, because of his feeling, his point that the lockdown should have happened several months ago and not now as we head to the high holidays. But I'm gonna skip all that. I'm not gonna get into the he said, she said right now. I just don't feel like it, honestly. So Minister Litzman, construction minister, resigned. Maybe you're in favor of Litzman and what he did. Maybe you're against Litzman. I'm going to skip over that. The prime minister last night left for Washington for a historic signing agreement of normalization with the United Arab Emirates. JNS reports that in addition to the UAE signing, Bahrain has become the latest country to normalize ties with Israel, U.S. President Donald Trump announced via Twitter on Friday. According to a joint statement by Trump, Prime Minister Netanyahu and Bahraini King Hamad bin Isa bin Salman Al Khalifa, that's a long name, Israel and Bahrain agreed to establish full diplomatic relations as part of a historic breakthrough to further peace in the Middle East, here according to JNS. Again, just weeks after Israel and the UAE agreed to normalize ties, the signing agreement is Tuesday in Washington. I saw the invitations. I actually have a family member who was invited to the ceremony, but I do not think he or she will be taking place because of the corona. An anonymous family member. I'm not going to talk about that, but I saw the invitation firsthand. Big signing ceremony on Tuesday. Bahrain has accepted Trump's invitation to join Israel and the UAE at the ceremony. Bahrain's foreign minister is planning to represent his country. This is the fourth Arab country to establish diplomatic relations with Israel, including Egypt and Jordan, along with the UAE and now Bahrain. Bahrain also opened its airspace last week to allow flights between Israel and the UAE. Saudi Arabia also agreeing to open airspace to Israeli flights flying east. And that is also big news. We'll see what happens with the Saudis in terms of a formal normalization agreement. Also reports here in the Jerusalem Post that Israel and Morocco would soon be establishing a normalization of some kind. Opening up of direct flights between Morocco and Israel. We'll see how that plays out. Again, the key issue here is Iran, Israel, and the Gulf states joining forces against the mullahs in Iran, who may in fact take out their aggression on those countries even before they try anything with Israel. So united against Iran, I think that is a big theme of these agreements. Yesterday was September the 13th. I don't want to call it an anniversary, maybe a commemoration of the signing of the Oslo Accords on the White House lawn back in 1993. Here, I'm going to read a tweet here by Aaron David Miller, one of the peace negotiators. He said, 27 years ago, I sat on the White House South Lawn watching Clinton, Rabin, Arafat, their famous handshake, foolishly thinking we had reached an irreversible moment in peacemaking. Memo to current future peacemakers, don't hype and overclaim. It's never as good as you think it is. Well, let me just say this with all due respect to Aaron David Miller. In terms of the handshake on the White House lawn, yeah, you guys were fools. You were absolute fools because you ignored what Arafat was saying to his own people in Arabic. He was telling his people that this is the first stage in the destruction of the state of Israel. He was saying it openly. He was saying it openly as he dressed in military garb for a peace signing ceremony. That maybe should have tipped it off back then where he stood on things. He was wearing a soldier's uniform at a peace signing agreement at the White House. Maybe if you would open your eyes, maybe if you would listen. And I'm talking about all of those who still think that we can trust the Palestinian Authority or Hamas as they call for Israel's destruction on a daily basis. Why not just listen to what they're saying in Arabic before you go down the path of as you say, foolishly thinking we had reached a wonderful, irreversible moment in peacemaking. Open your eyes, people. It's not that hard. There are plenty of resources out there. Memory, Palestinian Media Watch. You can actually hear what our enemies are saying and base policy around their comments, around their attitudes, around their policies. It's not that hard to know what your enemies are saying. They don't say it on CNN. They don't say it in English. But on a daily basis, incitement against Israel, against the Jews. But some people don't want, they want to write books and they want to make millions of dollars on speaking tours. And they want to be known as peacemakers and they want to shove a two-state solution down Israel's throats. Yeah, there's still people like that out there that still believe that that's the path we should go down, even after so many Israelis have lost their lives. Sacrifices for peace, right? That's what they used to say. Ridiculous. Sacrifices for peace. There should be no sacrifices. If you want real peace, you shouldn't have to make sacrifices and paying in Israeli blood. And in terms of the agreement with the UAE, Bahrain, all these countries, I'm not seeing, unless I'm missing it myself, I'm not seeing their leaders incite against the Jewish state of Israel. So I don't think there's a comparison that can be drawn between the Oslo Accords and Arafat and these leaders who want to unite and have normalization with Israel and form a united front against Iran and trade and economics and that whole deal. I don't think that's the same situation. So this is Aaron David Miller is a failed peacemaker. There are many others who fit that description who are now saying, don't hype it. Let's not hype it. Just because you failed doesn't mean you can't hype something else. And again, I personally have issues with the agreements. If we're paying the price in terms of not applying sovereignty, there are downsides to it, but all of a sudden these irrelevant voices open their mouths years later and talk about coulda, shoulda, woulda, when at the time, during money time, during crunch time, they made the wrong decisions and now, of course, can sit and tweet away and reflect on it 27 years later. Anyway, that's my take on that. I mentioned this is a disturbing, if this is accurate, a disturbing development here. I just said it's not all peaches and cream, as they say. According to a Times of Israel report, the Trump administration gave the UAE a commitment during normalization negotiations that Washington would not recognize Israeli annexation. It says here on parts of the West Bank, I don't use that word, Judea and Samaria, and I don't use annexation, I use an application of sovereignty until 2024 at the earliest. Sources with direct knowledge of the matter told the Times of Israel. So according to this report, Israel will not have, and this is what gets me, will not have permission from the United States, will not have support of the United States. Maybe that's a little lesser harsh of a word if Israel decides to apply sovereignty. It's off the table right now, according to this report. And this is what bothers me right here. According to three sources with direct knowledge of normalization negotiations, officials from the Emirates led by their ambassador to the U.S. focused on seeking assurances from the U.S. rather than Israel on the matter. They were largely uninterested in receiving an Israeli commitment to an annexation freeze, since they understood that Netanyahu would not move forward without U.S. support. So that Netanyahu said that for months. So are we that weak that the UAE, instead of talking to Israel or listening to Israel about what it plans to do in terms of the application of sovereignty, the UAE is listening to America, is talking to America about it. That seems like that's really disheartening. If we are that weak, where they are not even interested what Israel says it's going to do, then that's very sad. And this is where we messed up. Okay, maybe we botched this sovereignty thing because we didn't do it months ago. But if the UAE doesn't even care what the Israeli stance is, that is really, really weak. That is bad. Here's another point That's disturbing. The Trump administration is hoping to use the final year of its hypothetical second term to hold the Palestinians' feet to the fire, using the possibility of it otherwise backing annexation as the last piece of leverage to bring the PA to the table. Who needs these terrorists at the table? Let's keep them away from the table, the PA, Hamas, and all these people. Even just the PA, keep them away from the table. The Trump administration sees the UAE, Bahrain, and others stepping up. So why give the PA, these terrorists in suits, chance after chance? This I don't get. Why say to them, well, you can wait and play around for the next couple of years, but as long as in the final year of our second term in the U.S., at that point, using a threat of annexation to bring the PA to the table. I mean, are the people's lives a bargaining chip? The 450,000 residents of Judea and Samaria, are we a bargaining chip to try to bring the PA to the table, threatening that we're going to, that the U.S. will allow us to apply sovereignty? And saying that if you come to the table, well, we'll throw it out as well. We won't allow Israel to apply sovereignty. I don't like the way this is all phrased. Again, in this Times of Israel report, Israel should apply sovereignty now. We should have done it months ago. And it should not be contingent on what the behavior is of these terrorists in suits. The PA and Hamas both condemned, also Times of Israel, Friday's Israel-Bahrain normalization deal, calling it a stab in the back by an Arab state, an act of aggression against their people. Turkey and Iran also condemned the accord. The agreement was, quote, a stab in the back of the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian people, like the UAE deal Israel announced last month. This according to one of the ministers in the PA. Another minister, he recalled the Palestinian ambassador to Bahrain for consultations in response to the normalization agreement, yada, yada, Crimea River, you are terrorists in suits. You can have a freak attack about all these agreements. It just shows, again, who you really are. Your goal is not normalization. Your goal is not to improve the lives of your people. Your goal is to destroy the state of Israel. And that's why you're so upset when others don't come kissing up to you and don't take your side and decide enough of this already and we're going to try to normalize things with Israel. In Gaza, they burned pictures of rulers of Bahrain at some kind of Hamas rally, also burning or crossing out photos of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and Donald Trump, President Trump, who helped broker the deal. So they're not too happy about it in Gaza. They're not happy about it within the Palestinian Authority. A Hamas official said, we have to fight the virus. Quote, we have to fight the virus of normalization and block all its paths before it succeeds to prevent it from spreading. So this is a virus. Peace is a virus. Normalization, virus. When you're talking about Hamas, that's what they say. When Israel made a huge mistake of leaving Gaza, you remember this, 2005? Israel left behind the greenhouses. And what did Hamas do? Hamas and their people took down the greenhouses. They tore them up. They ripped out the plants. They burned down the green. They burned the greenhouses. They tore them down. You don't care about your own people, Hamas. You don't care about your own people. You want to destroy Israel. And somehow you still have the European Union, the UN, and others still supporting these people in Gaza. And I'm referring to specifically the leaders and Hamas and all the terrorists and anyone who sides with them in Gaza. They are against any normalization. They are against anything that helps the lives of their people. Their one goal, and they use their own people as pawns, just like UNRWA does, just like the UN does, using them as pawns against the state of Israel. It's just a matter of time, really, till the rockets start flying again. Maybe they'll be upset about these normalization agreements. They'll find another excuse every few months. They start launching the balloons and the rockets again. I say once and for all, I've said this on my show, I am against sending any IDF troops into Gaza. I don't want the IDF fighting against Hamas, fighting for essentially Mahmoud Abbas, because that's what it is. Unless Israel has the intention of going in and rebuilding Gush Katif, as we should, unless that's the plan, I don't want Israeli soldiers to have to pay the price, essentially fighting a war for Mahmoud Abbas and the PA against Hamas. I don't want that to happen. I still say turn off the electricity, turn off the water, let the people overthrow Hamas. Let the people really, really feel where their leaders have brought them. Okay, and don't give me this humanitarian nonsense about it. This will be illegal, or it's not right, or whatnot. Egypt has every much of a shared border with Gaza, yet no rockets are flying into Egypt. No kite bombs and balloons are being launched into Egypt. We have a shared border who could help Gaza if they wanted to. It's only against Israel. So I don't see any other way other than closing off Gaza completely. Let Egypt help them if they really want to help them. We need to, again, if we're not building Gush Katif, turn off the electricity and let the people there overthrow their leaders. And they'll get that message very, very quickly if Israel would decide to do the right thing and actually advance the lives of the people there. Yeah, it's going to be painful to start with, but advance the lives of the people by getting rid of Hamas once and for all. Finishing the show with some positive news here on this Monday. Soccer star Lionel Messi, he's the new face of the Israeli company Orcam, which makes devices that help the visually impaired identify their surroundings. Arguably one of the greatest soccer players or football players, if you're from Europe, of all time. Messi said it is a tremendous satisfaction to help improve the lives of blind and visually impaired people. He made his comments in a promotional video. He will be the brand ambassador for the Jerusalem-based company for 3 years. Again, it's called Orcam. Founded in 2010, Orcam devices attach to a user's glasses frames and convert visual information into audio that is relayed to the user's ear. So you can take that BDS and you know what you can do with it. This is a BDS fail. One of the greatest soccer players of all time. Spokesperson for an Israeli company that does good for the world, that helps people who can't see. That is Israel. That is the startup nation. It's unbelievable how many things Israel is doing for the world, whether in Africa. I just saw images of Israeli firefighters. Even though we're going through all this here now with Corona, they're out there fighting fires in California. That is the nation of Israel. That is what we contribute to the world. And you BDS haters, that's just too bad for you. And when we come up with an effective virus, an effective vaccine for the virus, if that happens, you BDS haters, you shouldn't take it. You definitely shouldn't take it. Even though you got approval by your terrorist leader, the head of BDS, what's his name, Barghouti, who said it's okay to take a vaccine made in Israel, even with BDS. Don't be hypocrites. In addition to throwing away your laptops and cell phones, if a vaccine is effective, and that's a big if, stand by your principles, BDS. Don't use that vaccine as well. That's going to do it for today. I want to wish everyone out there a Shana Tova, a good and healthy and happy new year. Please God, we will get through this pandemic very, very soon. Please, please, God, in this new year, 5781 on the Jewish calendar will be, please, God, the end of the corona, the COVID-19. Hopefully very soon in Israel, please, God, the numbers will go down. People will be healthy, will recover. And please, God, Nobody else should die from this pandemic. And things will be good here in the Jewish state of Israel. It's still, despite all this craziness, it's still a beautiful day here in Jerusalem, eternal capital of the Jewish people. Big shout out to Benjamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire, Tabitha Epstein, for everything she does behind the scenes. My name is Josh Haston. This is Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Get in touch with me during the week. Josh at thelandofisrael.com on Facebook, Joshua Haston on Twitter, at Josh Haston, and on Instagram as well. Most importantly, everyone out there in the wonderful world of ours, be safe. Shana Tova Umetuka, from Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the Jewish people and the state of Israel. Shalom, shalom.
Shalom, everybody. This is Jeremy Gimpel from the Land of Israel Network, but also from the Land of Israel Fellowship. Today, Ari and I and Tehila Gimpel are preparing for the biblical feasts. We have members from 31 countries joining us every week, Sunday, live at 6 p.m. For those that can't make it live, they get a direct recording sent to them. We're growing together. We're learning together. We're celebrating together. The gates are open for all who want to come and join. And so this is a personal invitation to all the listeners out there. If you want to join the Land of Israel Fellowship, just go to thelandofisrael.com/fellowship and you can join us tomorrow as we prepare for the big days ahead.